Ah, you're here. Another soul drawn inevitably to the foot of the larynx camphorae, the Japanese larch, the stiff weeper, in all its glory, standing here as the survivor of terrible fires, and so very much more. You will not forget this tree. You cannot. May the smell of burnt wood make you feel forever grateful to be alive. If you sit just so, with your back against the trunk, or stand facing out, if you look around you, and underfoot, those blackened tree trunks bending in the wind, or solid as stone, bleeding perhaps, discoloured sap, sticky and attractive to insects that will die there in the embrace of an apparently dead tree. Have you touched the trunk? Good, good. The salt from your fingertips helps. It all helps. Others reach up, but this tree wants to touch the ground. This tree has seen so much sorrow. So much sorrow. Does that make you sad? It should. Listen. This is a story of a painter, and of the tree she painted time and time again, and of the man who built a chair from limbs he stole from the tree, and of the remnants of that man, the ghost of him, who you will see if you blink at the right time and look behind the shadows. The painter received her first set of paints at 9 years old, then drove her mother to drink, demanding ideas of what to paint. The dog, the creek near your school, that bowl of fruit, this pile of dirty dishes, this glass of wine, I don't know. Why don't you help me cook the dinner? Then you can paint our evening meal, her mother said eventually. She said, you might be my blood and bone, but you test me to my very limits. You should feel my heart, its skipping beats left, right and centre. The painter pinched her little brother, wanting a distraction, so that she could sneak out of the house and run away, her satchel packed with her father's peppermints stolen from his desk, her mother's pin money from the biscuit tin, and her paints and a canvas. I'll be famous then, you'll see, she told the world out loud. They say a missing child will be found within a kilometre or two of home, if she is to be found at all. But the painter travelled much further. She had her bike with the basket in the front, and she had the energy of the furious, the I'll show her, and the my mother hates me. She rode until she found a welcoming grove of trees. One tree in particular caught her artist's eye, a tall Japanese larch, although she didn't know what it was. She liked the way it drooped, and she could see that nestled beneath it, at the foot of this lovely tree, rested a pale wooden chair, and that, she thought, would be a good subject. The fire was a long time in the future, and she'd laugh at you if you told her, because who could imagine that beautiful arbour turned to ash? She was filthy by now, tears leaving tracks on grubby cheeks. She was hungry. She thought nobody had even noticed that she was missing. She set herself up and began to paint. She wasn't happy with the first effort, but she would never burn the picture because of what she captured in it. A man sitting in that chair, watching her, when no man was there at all. We'll call that man the chairmaker. He was very full of himself growing up, one of those people whose small talents are amplified because they are charismatic, likeable. He loved to walk people through these trees and show them the artistry of the trunks and of the limbs and of the pine cones. Art, he called it, collecting those pine cones, turning a piece of perfection into a joke. He made them into characters like Alpine, who was a skier, and Supine, who was in bed, and Lupine, who was a wolf. He was far too clever for his own good, because if you have to explain a joke, direct people to the dictionary, you've not been very funny, have you? If you own one of these, watch out. I'll weep for you when things go wrong. He moved from pine cones to chair making, coming in the day to scavenge for fallen branches, but by night he swung from the ones he couldn't reach, breaking them off and piling them up as if he were a great hunter. You can see the scars on the trees and others. They are everywhere. He made the chair the painter saw, and he gave it pride of place in his kitchen. But it squeaked and squealed, and people thought he was killing a pig or a girl, so he took it back and set it under the tree. When a young girl went missing in his neighbourhood, not found to this day, people remembered the squeals, and in the middle of the night, her father killed him, strung him up by this very tree, and muttered curses as he died. The chairmaker sat in his chair under the larch, seen and unseen, until someone took that chair away. Now he sits on the branches above you. Can you see him? Hear him? Sometimes he whistles through his teeth. He wasn't there, and yet the painter saw him and captured him on her canvas. She, unlike that other poor girl, was found. But here is her tragedy, her guilt. Her mother died while she was missing. A broken heart, they told her. A dark flood of fear turning her blood to sludge. Sorrow turning her muscles to stone. There was much discussion at the time over whether the painting could be considered a portrait, given the comparative size of the tree to the man. In the end, it was entered into and failed to win all the landscape prizes. But still, she wondered if the man she saw and her mother were connected somehow. They weren't. And so she went back every year on that day to paint the tree again, and the chair, and the man. She never saw her mother, although sometimes she fancifully painted the woman floating angelically, happy. You can see the chair disintegrate, fall apart, over the years in the series of paintings, but the man remains. The painter died alone, and her paintings of the tree were lost and found, lost and found, lost. They've not been seen in many years. Look out for one, will you? You'll recognize the tree, and you'll see how clever she was. I have seen such sorrow. I'm not alone in this. There are others. I weep over you. I keep you here because I like the life's blood running through you, the memory of life running through me and through the ghost in my branches. By your very presence, we are brought back to life in ways good meaning and wholesome, but also this. Each moment you sit by me is a moment taken by me. And do you feel a small fluttering in your throat? A tickle? That's us, up close, wanting you to sit by the tree and keep him company, and in time, perhaps, in time, to nourish us with your blood and bone. But I'm at the end of the story, and the beginning is where all good stuff is. Should I start at the beginning again?